Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for no longer KER Politics, KER Finance. Got Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc Postma, on the line with me right now. Boy, I'm sure glad I brought him into the fold about 10 years ago. Aside from being a very, very nice guy, the guy is an absolute genius. We're going to talk a little bit about gold here for the first half of the show, and then we're going to talk a bit about some of the companies that I'm now getting interested in. Dr. P, what do you think about the gold market right now? I know that's kind of a loose statement, but boy, it's all over the board right now. What's going on in your opinion, sir?
Well, as I've said on, you know, the Corlin Report just last week, and you got me to fill in for somebody else. Who was that, Al?
I didn't get you to fill in last week. No, last that was about, you haven't been on with me for about 3 weeks, Doctor.
No, I mean the gentleman that you were going to have talk about it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Stanley Lieb, Dr. Stan Lieb. I want to introduce you to him over the phone. He's a real genius. Mm-hmm. He's got a PhD. Of course, you have an MD, and I think that's a couple rungs up the ladder. Stanley is a very, very good guy. He's a regular on the show, as hopefully I can get you to be also. Just to say one thing, Doc, let me turn my phone off. You are far and away one of the best in the world. Having said that, Doctor, what do you think about the market right now?
Yeah, as I mentioned last week, you know, with Corey,
yeah,
that I've right along talked about how August was going to be the high way back when, and that we would probably see a steady decline over the next few weeks and months. And I thought we might have a chance end of last year to try to move up and challenge the highs, or this year. But the gold market remains under pressure, and I think it will continue to remain under pressure. As I mentioned last week, we may get a little bump in March, mid-March to late March, and we may already have had it this past week. We'll see, but we may get more mid-March to late March. If we don't, we're going to see more pressure in April. It's just a slow grind down to seek a bottom. And once we find the bottom, it's not going to be a miraculous move back up, I don't believe, like we had in March of last year. But it's going to have to establish a new trading range lower for a while before we go up and challenge the highs again. And that's on a technical basis. And I think the reason we're seeing a lot of this with gold is, frankly, the increase in interest rates and the strength of the dollar. But that will eventually end if rates continue to go up, it's going to cut off this economy, and the Federal Reserve will not allow that.
You know, I got to tell you one thing, Doc, because you know we've known each other for probably 15, 20 years now. We've been talking about gold. I tried to learn technicals, but once I realized that I would never be as proficient at it as somebody like yourself, I gave up and I went back to being a fundamentalist. The comment that I have to make right now is, if you remember when I was talking about gold going back about, I don't know what, 4, 5, 10 years ago, I was always really jacked up about environmental issues, political issues, etc., etc. In terms of political issues, we could not get more tumultuous than we are right now. I think the country is very possibly on the verge of some very, very serious, perhaps very, very serious political gyrations. But to me, that's good when it comes to gold. And the reason I say that for both gold and silver is I still believe, Doctor, that they are the currency, both the currency of last resort. And I have to say, I think that we've got some optimistic times for gold, in my opinion, based on fundamentals. Why don't you come in on this, would you?
Oh, yeah, and gold is going to be in a quiet zone here. Everybody's lost interest in it at this point again, and it will be that way for some time. I think it could be weeks to months, but that's okay because there's some technicals that tell me, along with the fundamentals of constant money printing, that it's going to eventually move even higher. Just because they're printing money doesn't mean it's going to move higher based on that. There's always a delay factor. But also, a lot of that money sits on the balance sheets of banks, and you're not going to get the inflation people want. As far as cost push inflation, you can get a little demand pull inflation like you are with commodities right now, but commodities don't make up a big part of the economy, not enough to really push inflation. So it's going to have to come from a cost push standpoint. And when that happens, you're going to get real consumer inflation, and that's when when gold will see a big impact, because the dollar should weaken at that point in time too. But that's down the road, and it takes time for it to work through it. And it really... what you have to see is velocity of money picking up, and we haven't seen that in years. And that's what's really going to determine, I think, the next move in gold is increase of velocity of money through cost push inflation.
Well, I don't disagree at all with that, but the one comment that I would have to make, Doctor, is this. When you look at our economy right now, it's very interesting with all the stimuluses that the new administration is putting out. I have to tell you, though, the reason I want to have gold in my back pocket, and more importantly, the reason I want to have gold is because the money printing that's going on right now is absolutely staggering, and we do not have anything to back that money right now. As soon as the faith of the American public becomes more realistic and people realize that the dollar isn't worth a you-know-what, I think gold is going to come crashing out with a roar. There's no question about that. You know, here in the Northwest, because of the stimulus, it's gotten so bad, people aren't even looking for jobs, number one. And I tried to hire somebody to do some work around our place that you, where you and your wife have been to before. I can't even hire anybody. They're looking at me and they're saying, I can just sit on my butt all day and I'm going to get a stimulus amount of around $1,400. And so why should I work? I think the stimulus basically is sent for that reason, for the psychological reason. I agree with the Mormons. I have to say this. They do not believe in welfare, and I don't either at this point. What do you think about that, Doctor?
Well, the stimulus is just more, is a new form of welfare, and I think we're morphing into a universal basic income situation, and that's how desperate the government is getting to keep this thing going. And they're getting more desperate all the time, the government and the Federal Reserve, and it's not going to end well. And we can see...
No, it's not.
No, and it's every... They're trying everything under their power to keep this thing going as far as the economy. Low interest rates. We're going to morph into a universal basic income sort of situation.
Yep.
And, you know, half of the population right now doesn't have $500 for an emergency.
That's amazing. I got to tell you, I thank my lucky stars is all I can say. Doc, we have to take a commercial break real quick. And what I want to talk about in the second half is I want to talk about your general feeling about the psychologically in the junior resource market. I think there's some big money that's going to be made there, but one point I want to make, and I'll make it here, not right away, but in the next segment, I think it's going to take a while, because I think that before people come to realize how bad it is, I mean, we're printing money, we live in a printing press, it's absolutely nuts. You know, if I wanted to refinance my home, I could get an interest rate now at about 1%. I gotta tell you, Doc, I never in my lifetime thought I would ever see 1% again. Quick commercial break. Stick around, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back with the doctor.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. I'm chatting again with Doc Postma. We're talking a little bit about the state of our economy right now and why I personally believe that it's really good for gold. We have mega welfare going on right now. I hope the Democrats are happy is all I can say. We're not talking politics ever again on this program. I've made too many enemies, and interestingly enough, I've made the enemies, but everything that we have talked about has proven to be true. I guess, Doc, you and I and Corey must be the smartest people in the world. Let's talk a little bit about the public sector of the gold market, and by that I mean the resource companies. You got any that you're watching right now, Doc, and if so, why?
Oh, I've got a number of them. What I've done is I had good play on some copper companies. I sold out of those because I thought they were going to peak, and they have, and they're starting to come down a little bit or establish new trading ranges. And as I mentioned before, I'm 38% in cash after I sold those copper companies. And what I'm doing is waiting for gold and silver to move down, and I think they have a little bit further to go. Not much. They've had the vast majority of their move down. And I've just started to nibble, and I mention it on the blog sites when I do buy a little bit. And I think April is going to be another good chance. I think it's a good chance to buy all the way into the deep spring until June. And I'll probably get more aggressive as we move down here. And I'm purchasing some project generators, royalty companies, some juniors, some mid-tiers, and some of the more well-endowed stocks. So I spread my risk, and they've come down nicely here, and I'm going to probably get even more aggressive in the next few weeks because I think GDX has a chance to get down to around the 28 level. I think it's going to be a great opportunity again, and then it's a matter of just sitting on my hands like a lot of people and waiting for the next big move in the precious metals, and that's what I'm doing currently.
Doc, I have to tell you, it is Dick also, I know that, but Doc, I got to tell you, I think that everything that we talked about back in the early part of the century, when I was the biggest gold bug in the world, I think it's all going to come true. It's not coming true right now, but definitely the signs are there. You know, I want to get into one thing. Do you buy, when you're buying companies, and let's say when you're buying aggressively and you're buying aggressively buying, I think is the best way to put it. What do you look for, sir?
Well, I look at the fundamentals and I look at the technicals to see if it matches, to see if the two match. So I look at both of them. And if they both align well, that's when I start to purchase. Just because a company has good fundamentals, that doesn't mean I buy it just then. I look at the technicals to see if there's a chance that it's those companies, that pricing will fall further. And then I watch it for a while. And when I think it gets really comfortable as far as the technicals, that's when I start purchasing. And I look at management. I look at their cash position. I look at their reserves. I look at their number of shares outstanding, which is very important to me. And
let's elaborate on that. Do you like low cap stocks better when there's just a few shares out?
Absolutely. Okay. And if management can manage their share structure and be into drilling and have cash on hand, and they're very careful about their share structure, it impresses me. And if they still get good drilling, and then if they have a move up in their stocks, if they then, have a private placement and, get a good amount of money again before their share dips again, and limiting their share structure, I find companies like that very favorable.
I'll tell you what I do. When I was in the business, I was also looking at share structure. That was very, very important to me. But what went along with that hand in hand, and I'd like to get your comments on this. We've talked about this before. But I want to see where the shares are held. I want to know exactly who's holding the shares. I want to know exactly, does management have their money where their mouth is? Are they buying stock? Are they selling stock? And that would go along very well for me, Doc, with how well is the company capitalized? Do they have enough money to do what they want to do? Does management have enough money to live on so they don't have to worry about feeding their families? That's becoming a pretty big consideration right now in our country, Doc. And I'm really sorry that I have to say that. Any comments, sir?
Yeah, and the other part of that is the institution holdings. And if there are outside people with the expertise that are buying into that company, it's not only management holding it. And that's, to me, it's huge, too. I also look at that, not only a tight share account, but whether institutions are or whether people that understand precious metals in companies, are also purchasing, but also the percentage held by management. That's very important to me.
Incredibly important. Do they need that money for an investment because they believe in what they're doing, or do they need that money to live? The only time I've ever, this is kind of a grandiose thing to say, Doctor, but the only time I have ever lost money using my particular philosophy, which you know all about because you and I talk about this, used to talk about this on a daily basis, I want to know how comfortable the management is in terms of their financial situation. I want to know exactly what they plan to do in terms of raise money in the future. Do they need to raise money, or do they have a line of credit, or are they a popular enough company that they can raise money easily by a private placement? That is the name of the game right now. We've got about just a little bit less than 2 minutes here, Doc. I want to say one thing. I'm on the record of saying this. I think that we are on the threshold of a bull market in precious metals like you and I have never seen. This could be the last time in my lifetime that I'll ever see a bull market as robust as what we have right now. You know, gold right now it's under 1730 as I'm looking at the live market here on our homepage. But there's an interesting U in the market right now. Just today, it's traded in the range between 1730 and just a skosh over 1730. Again, the same U shape I'm seeing in silver. I think right now, you guys out there, you really need to forget about politics, forget about conspiracy theories. Go out there and make some money. Everybody who I comment with on this site is a good friend of mine, and I know we used to get really involved in politics. That is very definitely a no-win situation unless you define winning as being losing a lot of friends. Having said that, I just want to say one thing. Stay safe. Don't worry about anything. Watch the market every day. I'll be into it, not every day, but certainly every week. Dr. Postma, thank you so much.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, you guys. Time for KER Politics and Gals. I have an interesting woman on the line. She was recommended to become a guest on our show by my friend Jim McKinney. Her name is Pam Popper, Dr. Pam Popper. She's a naturopath. Pam and I have been talking a little bit off mic here. So we have certain parameters. Actually, we have no parameters as to where this conversation can go. I'm very curious about, I've done a fair amount of background work on Pam. I'm very curious about her background. I'm very curious about why she believes what she believes. And the one thing that she does believe that I am a firm believer in, as you know, after listening to me for over 10, 15 years now, I really believe in civil discourse. That's exactly what this is going to be. We're going to devote half the show to Pam. Let me just say why. Pam is a naturopathic physician. She has written a book that is available on Amazon. It's called COVID Operation. It's the story of how the COVID-19 hoax began.
who the major players are and how the plan was executed. It's a very disturbing account of how easy it is to take control of people who assume that they will continue to enjoy freedom without holding government, the media, and many others accountable. I personally cannot believe, this is the last thing I'm going to say here, how we as Americans do not hold the media accountable for where, what direction they're going in right now. Pam, let's start out, before we talk about the book, let's start out talking a bit, if you wouldn't mind, about your background.
Well, my background is, I came from a business background, and I got interested in health really by accident. It's not, I didn't practice healthy habits or anything like that. And quite by accident happened upon what I thought was an interesting niche in the healthcare business, and we carved it out at my company. I started my company over 25 years ago, and it's informed medical decision-making, essentially teaching people to make decisions about the food they eat, the supplements they take, the tests, the drugs, the procedures that the medical profession recommends, just making those decisions the way that you make decisions about cars and houses and retirement accounts and college educations and other things that are important in your life. And getting away from the way that this is typically done, where people just do what they're told or a neighbor suggests something and they jump on it. And, you know, after 25 years in this business, the most common line spoken to me is, if I'd known then what I know now, I never would have done it. You know, and so do what you do when you buy a house. You check things out. You ask questions. You think about what this means for you and your finances and your future, and then you make a decision. And so this whole thing that we're going through right now just became an extension of that. Our members and clients expect that when something new develops in the healthcare industry or in health and politics, because they're intertwined, as you know, that me/we will do a lot of research and report on it. And I've always given some of that away, you know, through YouTube and through my newsletter and that sort of thing. And so that's how this whole journey that we're on right now began. It was just an extension of what we've been doing for 25 years.
What I would like to do, Pam, is I want to take advantage of what you do, in the sense that I personally, Larry, I want you to hear this. I personally plan to sign up for your program and learn as much about it as you care to teach me. Let's talk a little bit about how you work with clients and how I can get involved.
Well, when a client comes to us, you know, we're not doctors. We don't do direct care, okay? I mean, we have a lot of health professionals on our staff, but we're not in the direct care business. We're in the help you make a decision about it business. So a typical person might come to us, usually with a lot of medical history, and not the common denominator is, gosh, it seems like the more doctors I hang out with, the worse everything gets, right? So what people are asking us to do is help them get out of the medical mill. And so what that means is looking at all the decisions that they've made in the past. Were they good, bad, et cetera? And I don't mean good or bad like I know everything. I mean just looking at evidence. These are all evidence-based decisions, all right? And then looking at the decisions in front of people right now. Should I continue to take this drug? Do I need a new doctor? Is this test something that will benefit me, or am I more likely to be harmed by it? Somebody's recommended I have this surgical procedure. What are the risks and the benefits? Is it even necessary? And the entire process, I like to compare what we do to what realtors do when selling houses. Realtors don't tell you where to live. They make the process of buying a house a little bit easier to navigate, but you have to decide where you're going to live. And having said that, realtors can be really nice people, but that doesn't stop you from getting online and checking out the comps on the street and what are the property taxes and, you know, doing your own research too. So that's essentially how we walk people through this, and they learn how to read medical studies and scientific articles. It's something we can teach anybody, including middle school students, to do, so that they can make the right decision for themselves. And sometimes somebody will even ask me, well, Pam, if you were in my situation, what would you do? And I tell them, I'm not going to tell you, and I'm not trying to be a smart aleck with you. I'm just saying that the decision has to be yours. It's not my body. It's not my money. I don't have a horse in this race. I mean, it really does have to be your decision, and my job is just to make sure that you understand the risks and the benefits of the options in front of you. So many times our people go back to their doctors, and they know much more about the treatments that they've been offered or the or whatever it is they've been told to do than their doctors do. And I'm not saying that because, you know, we're so smart. I'm just saying that doctors often just do what their professional societies and that sort of thing tell them to do, and they're not so good at thinking for themselves in many situations.
You know, Pam, I got to tell you, just on a personal note, I am a Christian, and I'm not bringing that up to flog anything at all. I'm just saying that most of the physicians who I am involved with, both as guests on my radio program and when I take advantage of their profession, I want to say they are of the same mind bent that I am. Agree or disagree, as we talked earlier, it really doesn't matter. And most of them, if not all of the physicians that I am currently involved with, feel exactly the same way that you do. They're not angry at the medical profession or anything. They simply agree that you have to take advantage of the system and make yourself feel better through your own actions. Pam, tell me a little bit about the qualifications of your staff, if you would.
Well, we have a pharmacist, we have nurses, we have dietitians, we have a psychiatrist, we have licensed therapists, we have a physical therapist. I want to say something about credentials because I think this is really important too. I think that in the healthcare field, there's way too much emphasis put on credentials, and we've all seen situations in which doctors who have Ivy League educations and they've worked at prestigious institutions say things that are patently false and make recommendations that are patently dangerous, all right? So I don't want to be disrespectful of education or credentials because I think that's throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yep.
But I tell people the thing that drives healthcare decisions is what evidence says about those decisions. In other words, if you're a cancer patient, let's just take this for example.
Pam, I don't have to cut you off right now, but you've only got about 30 seconds, then we have to
go. I'll tell you, I'll just make it quick. So if you're a cancer patient and your Harvard-educated doctor is recommended a treatment that only extends your life by 10 weeks. The important thing is not Harvard. The important thing is understanding it's 10 weeks and then looking at whether or not that's a good value proposition for you. And so too many people say, Harvard, I'll do anything he says or she says.
Yep.
Wrong choice. Okay.
That's very definitely the wrong choice. Ladies and gentlemen, top of the hour news is coming up shortly. I'm going to take a real quick break with Dr. Pam Popper. I like what she has to say. I find her to be a very, very interesting professional woman. We're going to elongate, so to speak, this interview into the next segment. Looking forward to see what you all have to say about Dr. Popper. So far, I have to say that during my brief discussion with her, I am pleasantly surprised and impressed. Stick around after the commercial break. Going to be right back. Hey, welcome back. Continuing on with my discussion with Dr. Pam Popper. Pam, I would like to talk a little bit more about what we are discussing right now, but I don't want to take time away from your book. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, my book, I'll tell you why I wrote the book. First of all, I was doing a lot of research last summer. I wanted to put together information for the average person looking at this and just wanting to know what's happening here. Well-referenced. I mean, everything I put out is really well-referenced, but something that would just put everything in sequence, like how did this start? Who are the people behind it? What's their motivation? What kind of evidence supports what's been done, what should have maybe been done instead of this, and then what we think is going to happen next? And so far, if you go back and watch my first video I ever posted about this back in March, eerily, everything I said that was going to happen in early March is exactly what ended up happening. So I had a lot of background knowledge that gave me some insight into this. And it reads like a John Grisham novel. That's what people tell me. And that's what I wanted it to do. I wanted people to sit down and read this and say, oh, a science book. I'm going to force myself through this because I want to know this stuff. I wanted people to read it because it was like, I can't put it down. I want to know how the story ends, you know. So so that's basically it. And what I think the main point of the book is what you said at the beginning of our interview, that this didn't really have much to do with health. This had to do with control of people. And we're finding that out more and more, I think, every day as more and more things are disclosed and more data comes out, and it just the story becomes more and more difficult to for the people behind it to hold together. It just doesn't make any sense. They should be dropping like flies in Florida and South Dakota, and they're not. And in places where everybody's been locked down, the death rate's through the roof. And that's just one piece of very inconvenient data, but there are thousands of pieces of inconvenient data, so... That's what the book is about.
And people obviously can benefit by reading this book because they will know more about what's going on and they will become more aware, perhaps, of a bit of a hidden agenda that the government is more interested in than much of anything else. Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I think that's probably true. I think the other thing is that it provides a roadmap of how to fix it and keep it from happening again. I mean, the key to solving any problem is figuring out how the problem developed. And then the key to preventing it from happening again is to fix those things. And it's very clear that we had been careening in this direction for a very long time. I mean, government has been out of control for a long time and increasingly intrusive. I don't find many people who disagree with that.
Nope.
I think that everybody that I talk to, and this has certainly proven it, has seen the medical system careen out of control. And the willingness of doctors to go along with dangerous things was really amplified by the opiate epidemic. I mean, maybe 10 or 20% of those opiate drugs were prescribed in pill mills, but the rest of it was doctors in everyday practices and medical institutions prescribing away because they believed what Purdue Pharma told them. There was an epidemic of untreated pain, and Oxy wasn't addictive. Well, those were patently false statements, but doctors acted on them, and we saw the disastrous consequences. So there are wonderful people in medicine, and I think it's really important to point that out, and I've had the privilege of knowing some of them over the years, principled people who do the right thing. But the profession as a whole needs a big redo. I mean, everything from the way we educate doctors to the amount of power that they have to the lack of accountability that the medical profession has, and to a certain extent, and I think it's always important, I should say, to make sure that people see a positive spin to this. This whole episode is going to force some reform to happen that I'm not sure would have happened any other way in areas of education and government and medicine and media. And, you know, there will be a lot of good that comes out of this, which doesn't diminish the suffering that people are having right now. I mean, nothing will resolve that. But I think that we'll look back on this in 10 years and say, miserable period of time, good things came out of it that probably couldn't have been accomplished any other way.
Now, let me ask you this, Pam. Are you referring to the opioid crisis? And I can certainly make some valuable comments on that. Let me rephrase that. I can ask some pretty valuable questions on that area. Or are you talking...
I'm referring to the COVID crisis. The lessons we could have learned from the opiate crisis, there weren't any. Because what happened is the people who own Purdue Pharma aren't in prison. And the doctors who prescribed are still practicing every day. And what led to that, the basic premise that doctors can do anything they want with no accountability, that's still the way it is, which is why we have this mess that we have right now. So, one of the things, and I will make a promise on air to you and to whoever's listening, as I said 25 years ago that before I leave this planet, I will get a law passed that makes it a criminal offense to not properly inform people before you deliver medical care with the exception of emergency. If your head's bleeding on the sidewalk, you need to let people save your life. But if you're sitting in a doctor's office or a nurse practitioner's office and somebody's telling you about some type of test or drug or treatment, the failure to inform people properly of risks and benefits would be a criminal offense. It is in the frickin' mortgage business, all right? Think about this for a minute. If a mortgage broker doesn't disclose the terms of a loan properly, misrepresents the interest rate, fails to disclose escalation clauses or something of that nature, if you do that a lot of times, you can go to jail for it. So if it's important enough for disclosure to have penalties like that in the finance business, my gosh, when we're talking about people's health and sometimes their lives, I think we need that kind of accountability there too.
I mean, there's no question about that. To me, that just makes common sense. So I want you to do me a favor. And Larry, I want you to hear this very, very clearly. I personally am going to, I've had health issues, as you know. I am going to subscribe to PAM's services. I fully intend to do that because I think it's the right thing for any clear-minded individual to do. She makes an awful lot of common sense. I'm going to read her book, but more importantly than that, I'm going to take advantage of her services, her company's services, I think I should say, and I'm going to walk every one of my listeners through this by commenting, number one, when I'm involved in something, and number two, why I'm involved in it and why Dr. Pam Popper's naturopathic techniques have either helped me or not helped me. Pam, is that okay?
That's fine. That's fine. And by the way, we don't use naturopathic techniques. That's not what our business is about at all, just okay. To make sure that you know what you're signing up for. We're basically, and I think this is another important point too, everybody's looking for some type of modality
yes.
where you can just do what you're told and it's going to be safe. And there's no such thing. Again, there's some good things about naturopathy. There's some very good things about traditional healthcare, and there's some good things to be found in many different aspects of healthcare. But the real thing that should drive the decisions is evidence to support. And frankly, the naturopaths are just as guilty as the medical profession, in my opinion, of promoting things that are not evidence-based. And evidence-based has to mean something, not just that there's something published in a medical journal. But what you'll learn if you take classes from us is how to apply rules of evidence. In other words, he said, she said, I've got an article, you've got an article, this doctor has that degree, somebody else has a different degree. This circular discussion about trying to search for the factoid that justifies something is ridiculous, all right? So what it has to come down to is like football. You can't just run up and down the field with a football for an hour and call it a game. There are rules about how many people can play on the team. There are rules about the first downs and 10 yards always, and the quarters are 15 minutes, and if you're going to kick a field goal, it has to go through the posts. And you have to do the same thing. You have to set some ground rules for how you're going to look at things, which we do. And then you start using those filters as you look at information, and you'll find that there's just as much voodoo going on in the alternative healthcare field, if not more, than there is in the traditional medical field. So the whole key is to just look at each thing as an independent thing and say, is this a good or a bad idea? Not is this less harmful than something else. Does this lead to a better outcome for a human who's got a health issue? Than some, you know, that's the basic thing that you're trying to get to is what is the truth about something. And again, I'll go back to the real estate business. A house isn't worth $50,000 or $2 million. It's worth a fairly specific amount of money, and there's a little wiggle room in terms of it. But you can get to the actual value of a home by doing some research, and that's exactly the same process we should be applying to health.
Pam, I appreciate your time. Going to have to cut it here. Going to have to finish out the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.